Sally to stare, and they sat at tea on her lawn at Pangbourne, in reference to the very house of which the library in question was the central, the pivotal, feature. Mary Boyne and her husband, in quest of a country place in one of the southern or southwestern counties, had, on their arrival in England, carried their problem straight to Alida Stair, who had successfully solved it in her own case, but it was not until they had rejected almost capriciously several practical and judicious suggestions that she threw it out. "Well, there's Ling in Dorsetshire. It belongs to Hugo's cousins, and you can get it for a song." The reasons she gave for its being obtainable on these terms, its remoteness from a station, its lack of electric light, hot water pipes, and other vulgar necessities, were exactly those pleading in its favor with two romantic Americans perversely in search of the economic drawbacks which were associated in their tradition with unusual architectural felicities. "I should never believe I was living in an old house unless I was thoroughly uncomfortable," Ned Boyne, the more extravagant of the two, had jocosely insisted. "The least hint of convenience would make me think it had been brought out of an exhibition, with the pieces numbered and set up again." And they had proceeded to enumerate, with humorous precision, their various doubts and demands, refusing to believe that the house their cousin recommended was really Tudor, till they learned it had no heating system, or that the village church was literally in the grounds, till she assured them of the deplorable uncertainty of the water supply. "It's too uncomfortable to be true," Edward Boyne had continued to exult, as the avowal of each disadvantage was successfully wrung from her. But he had cut short his rhapsody to ask, with a sudden relapse to distrust, "And the ghost? You've been concealing from us the fact that there is no ghost." Mary, at the moment, had laughed with him, yet almost with her laugh, being possessed of several sets of independent perceptions, had been struck by a note of flatness in Alida's answering hilarity. "Oh, Dorsetshire's full of ghosts, you know." "Yes, yes, but that won't do. I don't want to have to drive 10 miles to see somebody else's ghost. I want one of my own on the premises. Is there a ghost at Ling?" His rejoinder had made Alida laugh again, and it was then that she had flung back tantalizingly, "Oh, there is one, of course, but you'll never know it." "Never know it?" Boyne pulled her up. "But what in the world constitutes a ghost except the fact of its being known for one?" "I can't say, but that's the story. That there's a ghost, but that nobody knows it's a ghost?" "Well, not till afterward, at any rate."
"Till afterward?"
"Not till long, long afterward."
"But if it's once been identified as an unearthly visitant, why hasn't its signalement been handed down in the family? How has it managed to preserve its incognito?"
Alida could only shake her head.
"Don't ask me, but it has." "And then suddenly,"
Mary spoke up as if from cadaverous depths of divination,
"suddenly, long afterward, one says to oneself, 'That was it?'"
She was startled at the sepulchral sound with which her question fell on the banter of the other two, and she saw the shadow of the same surprise flit across Alida's pupils.
"I suppose so. One just has to wait."
"Oh, hang waiting," Ned broke in.
"Life's too short for a ghost who can only be enjoyed in retrospect.
Can't we do better than that, Mary?"
But it turned out that in the event they were not destined to, for within 3 months of their conversation with Mrs. Stair, they were settled at Ling, and the life they had yearned for, to the point of planning it in advance in all its daily details, had actually begun for them. It was to sit, in the thick December dusk, by just such a wide-hooded fireplace, under just such black oak rafters, with the sense that, beyond the mullioned panes, the downs were darkened to a deeper solitude. It was for the ultimate indulgence of such sensations that Mary Boyne, abruptly exiled from New York by her husband's business, had endured for nearly 14 years the soul-deadening ugliness of a Middle Western town, and that Boyne had ground on doggedly at his engineering, till, with a suddenness that still made her blink, the prodigious windfall of the Blue Star Mine had put them at a stroke in possession of life and the leisure to taste it. They had never for a moment meant...